Hey everybody, welcome back to Check the Gate and AFI Deep Dive. I'm Bert, and as always I'm joined here with Brandon.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello.
And today we are doing our 8th grab bag film. This is a Michael's pick. We're double dipping in the Michael's pick.
Ooh.
The 2014 film Interstellar, a film which is about when Earth becomes uninhabitable in the future, a former and ex-NASA pilot, Joseph Cooper, is tasked to pilot a spacecraft along with a team of researchers to find a new planet for humans. Now, break it down, Michael.
Break it down.
You said when you chose this, you were waffling between this movie and Inception. Why? Waffle, that's the correct term, right?
I like that, okay.
Is it wafting?
No, wafting is like an aroma. Waffling is like, do I do this, do I do that?
It's like you have two or waffles wavering in your hand, you know.
Yeah. You so like when Leslie Knope is...
Should I go with the Belgian waffle or the buttermilk?
Yeah, well, you Belgian. Anyway, sure. Why were you pancaking about between those two films? Why did this one win out?
Well, I think this one, it has to do with space and relativity, and I thought that was more interesting than watching Leo do some shit again. So, yeah, I don't know.
Brandon's ready to punch you right now. That's Brandon's boy you're talking about right there.
I got no problem with Leo, you know. I think it was mostly the space part. I think space is pretty cool, and you know, science is pretty neat. So that was probably what, you know, tipped the scales.
Mm-hmm. Did you barnstorm the theater like the rest of America to go see this in theaters? Because it was a trip in theaters.
I did not.
No. What about you, Brandon? You've seen this movie like 8 times a year.
But yeah, yeah. I watched it twice this week. So, Michael, had you seen this movie before, right?
Before we watched it for this episode?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, I'd seen it 2 other times, I think. I watched it once and I was like, what the hell was that? And then I watched it again. I was like, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and I think for me anyways, the more and more I watch it, There's even more things that I just pick up on and absolutely love. This movie to me though felt like Christopher Nolan was like putting everything he's got into it. Like,
yeah,
there was so many different symbols and symbolisms and symmetries, all the S words, you know, that connected to other movies, you know, other space movies or literary, you know, books. And the fact
do not
that,
go gently into that good night.
Yeah, and just the fact that it's, you know, science based to me was just incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty like watching it. I think the first time I watched it was like right around maybe within a year it came out, and watching it as an adult this time was more. That's not to fully say I appreciated it more because I did before. But I guess that's the right word. But you appreciate it more and find little details, like you said, of just how kind of complex and rooted in science it really is. So,
there's so much to wrap your head around in this movie that you do take away different things every time you watch it because you're so focused on, you know, something at the time, like the family connection of the movie or the space aspect of the movie or. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just so much to comprehend in this that you have to do it in segments.
And that's why I felt like it was easier to watch it this time is because, you know, I don't know, I'm a little bit older. I would hope a little bit wiser. Probably not, though.
We wore you down. Now the 3-hour movies don't seem like 3 hours anymore.
Especially watching these kind of 3-hour movies are much easier to watch than like, you know, Ben-Hur and shit. I mean, it... Actually, I'm not gonna redact it. We both
facts.
Know, you know?
Facts.
I say what I said.
I was like, nah.
Well, I've actually prepared a statement I'd like to read for you guys. I mentioned on Memento, there are specific Christopher Nolan movies that I snooted my nose to, and I would like to, like I said, I prepared to submit. Good morning. I address all of you now to apologize for my previous opinion about this film we are about to discuss. In the fall of 2014, 10 years and 2 weeks ago from today exactly, I was not the man who sits before you now. At the age of 23, I truly had only been a lover of film for about 4 years. I discussed in full my origin story, if you will, while watching Pulp Fiction for the first time on this said podcast. From that day on, I consumed all I could, seeking and searching for great directors' works that I could make my way through and add to the proverbial feather to my proverbial cap. Tarantino, Fincher, Hitchcock, both Andersons, Paul Thomas and Wes, the Coens, and, of course, Stanley Kubrick. All great filmmakers I would consume and add to my DNA, if you will. One director, however, I looked on with a sense of dissatisfaction, and that is Christopher Nolan. Not because of the man, however, but because of the cult of Nolan, or the Nolan Bros, as I refer to them. He made one of my favorite films of all time, for crying out loud. A man who is a great director, but because of The Dark Knight, any film he makes is treated like he's God's gift to mankind. The film we're about to discuss being one of the biggest offenders. On November 8th, 2014, I went to see Interstellar with two friends before going to a party downtown for one of my co-hosts' 21st birthday. With me at the theater, I carried a flask full of vodka to add to a large Sprite to hold me over for the 3-hour runtime. Imagine my dismay as I watched Nolan Bros cream their jeans to a movie that was blatantly ripping off my beloved 2001 A Space Odyssey. Spaceship, clearly the same. Instead of going to Jupiter, they head to Saturn. Instead of a monolith, a black hole. Instead of Hal, it's a robot named Tars. I sat there stewing in my seat as I sip my vodka Sprite watching Matthew McConaughey spout mumbo-jumbo timey-wimey bullshit. And then it happened. The goddamn bookshelf. Like, what the fuck? From that day on, I rolled my eyes whenever anyone talked about Nolan being the greatest director of all time. Fast forward to 10 years. I knew this film was coming up, and I remembered all the mumbo-jumbo timey-wimey and decided to sit down with my wife and watch it for the first time since that fateful day in November. I'm here to tell you two, and all those listening, that I couldn't have been more wrong. I say this with full hearts and clear eyes, that this film is truly a masterpiece. 23-year-old me couldn't tell the difference between an homage and a ripoff. I was astounded doing research to discover that this was neither nominated for director or best picture. While I still have issues with the Nolan Bros, I'm here to say that we need more filmmakers like Nolan. Actual creators making original films. Not all of his films are great. Dunkirk still sucks. And while I don't like Tenet, I do like what he was trying to do. Or did. I'm gonna level with y'all. I still don't get that one. Do I have half a clue about the science involved in Interstellar? Hell no. The bookshelf is still a booty cheeks ending. It makes zero fucking sense. But if you get it, please enlighten me. I'm here. But I digress. I say all this to say that art is subjective, and a movie you hate can be a movie you love in a short amount of time, or vice versa. Doing this podcast this past 4 years has really shown me that. All those comedies we didn't enjoy on the AFI Top 100 list are somebody's favorite movies. You just need to give things another try once in a while. The Goonies still suck, though. Thank you for your time.
Bravo. Bravo.
I stewed over that for about the last 2 days. I was like, I need to say something about this. Definitely something I'm very glad I was wrong about. When I watched it those 2 months ago, like I said, we were getting ready to move, and I was like, I know I'm going to have to watch this movie twice. We need to do this now while we're here. No phones, nothing going on, just sitting there watching it, and then just being upset that I didn't appreciate it when it first came out. Because I was probably loaded in the theater and more looking forward to getting more loaded after the movie.
That's funny. You went to see that on my on my 21st birthday?
Yeah, with Dave and Ben.
That's funny.
Then we went to Pie Hole, and I gave you a Newcastle and told you to chug it.
Yeah, it's a you know, very memorable day. And I was like, I'm just little. I can't chug it. Nice.
So... now that we got that preliminary stuff out of the way, I agree with what all y'all are saying. It was neat actually doing actual research and finding out that one of the executive producers, the theoretical physicist Kip Thorne, he wanted this movie to be completely grounded, as much as a movie like this can be grounded. The physical laws of time and space aren't messed with at all. And any sort of whimsical thing that could happen in a movie needed to be somewhat grounded in science and not just a screenwriter saying, and then they traveled the speed of light, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm not smart enough to tell you the science is accurate, but people who are tell me that it is, which makes this even much more impressive, to be honest. But let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Like I said, this is a 2014 film. Top three films of 2014. Number three, The Guardians of the Galaxy. Number two, The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies. And number one, Transformers, Age of Extinction.
Wow.
Now, kind of a dour year for movies. It's all sequels or...
or some Michael Bay stuff.
Well, you know, well, that's... And then I don't even... That's like the fifth movie in Transformers, and then The Hobbit is the third one, and then Guardians of the Galaxy is the first one, but the 17th Marvel movie, you know?
Yeah.
A ticket cost in 2014, $8.17. Was it ever that cheap? Which is equivalent to $10.82 our money. The budget for this film, I was surprised that it was $165 million. It looks so good. I guess I was surprised. $165 million is a lot. But the fact that it was under $200, which is equivalent to $218.4 million, the box office was $730.8 million, which is equivalent to $967.5 million.
Dang.
Crazy.
Film was nominated for 5 Academy Awards. By the way, 730, and then it's still not even in the... I think it's the 10th highest grossing film that year. I loved. Yeah. Nominated for 5 Academy Awards, but only won one. It lost production design, sound editing, sound mixing, and original score, which is insane, because this is...
Yeah, the...
The best score Hans Zimmer's ever done. Yeah. Even then, that was the one thing I was like, the music is really good.
Yeah.
I don't know if you researched this much, but like when they're on the planet with the water, the waterfall, and that ticking noise, that ticking noise actually represents 24 hours passing.
One Earth day. It's every 1.5 seconds, which equals one Earth day.
And like, there's shots in space where it's just completely quiet. You know, it's a ripoff. He got screwed.
Yeah. Will you see what won original score that year?
Yeah.
I think 2014. So it would have been the 2015 Oscars, but I feel like that is the Birdman year that won Best Picture. So I think it might have been that
for Best Music. For 2014,
yeah, original score, so probably Gravity. Whiplash or Birdman.
Gravity. Yep.
Okay, another space movie.
Dang.
I think that movie won cinematography too, by the way, which is wild because I was surprised that cinematography wasn't even nominated in this movie.
You know what's funny is in 2014, Matthew McConaughey won actor in a leading role for Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, that was the year that started the Oscar bet between Brandon and I because he picked Leo in Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, really?
And I had McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, yeah.
So was this actually the 12 Years a Slave year then?
12 Years a Slave is on here. Let's see.
Yeah, that won Best Picture then. Yeah.
Yeah.
It won Visual Effects, which is a no-brainer. Yeah.
Oh, original song in 2014 was Frozen, Let It Go. Nice.
And we all did.
We all did, yeah.
The Wickedly Talented. That was that year, too. Look at us.
Yeah, look at us.
What a great Oscars.
Full circle.
Yeah. Well, as this movie opens, as Blink-182 once said, we're getting real Dust Bowl footage. That is from a Ken Burns documentary. Those are actual real-life Dust Bowl survivors. discussing it, and then obviously Ellen Burstyn is added in there too. So if you don't know who Ellen Burstyn is, you're just watching old people talk about the Dust Bowl. But if you know who, you're like, why is the lady from Exorcist talking about the Dust Bowl like she was there? We meet Coop, played by Matthew McConaughey. He awakens from a nightmare from, like I said at the top, he is a ex-pilot turned, he's an ex-NASA pilot turned farmer, and he's waking up from some sort of crash that he had. We find out later that there's some sort of gravitational anomaly that messed all his instruments up. He awakens, and his young daughter comes in and spoils the movie for us. She says, I thought you were my ghost.
Boom. Mic drop.
Boop.
It's like I gave away the ending in the first
classic
2 minutes.
Nolan. Yeah. Like I said, the entire planet is in a dust bowl. McConaughey is now a corn farmer because it's the only thing that grows. Some joker across the street tried to grow okra, and now he has to burn his entire crops because okra don't grow no mo. By the way, this is also like in the string of movies where John Lithgow is just like the elder statesman who comes in, and he's just like, he's not doing anything big, he's not doing anything small, he's just like the supporting older grandpa father character, and then is dead by the end of the movie kind of thing. He's just, he goes in there, he nails it for the 15 minutes of screen time. I mean, honestly, this movie's just full of people with 15 minutes of screen time.
And they all kill it, like you said. I mean, he's a very convincing grandpa role, and he was there, you know, prior to everything going to shit. Like, he remembers the Yankees being in, you know, New York.
I want a damn hot dog.
Hot dog. Like, no, we eat corn, grandpa. Yeah. This is all we have left.
Popcorn at a game is a crime. Yeah, where's my Cracker Jacks? I do like how later in the movie, when it's grown-up Murph, with Casey Affleck, and they're all eating dinner, and everything at the table is corn based.
Yeah.
Like, they have corn cob, there's corn fritter, there's like.
The eat your corn puffs, you know.
Corn bread. Hardy poo. It's all, because that's all they have.
That's all I got.
It's a hearty poo they all have.
But it's details like that, though, that throughout the movie, that they're just everywhere filled with that. Mm-hmm. And you can spend your whole time watching it just picking out little Easter eggs like that.
Well, and I had read, because your brain goes Dust Bowl, okay, Midwest.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan he learned how to grow corn because he was the producer for Man of Steel, the Zack Snyder film. He learned how to grow corn, and he did it up in the mountains. They're not like on a mountain, but so like if you look in the background, there's like mountain regions around them. That doesn't normally grow. It only had to be up for so long, you know.
Didn't he pay like a shitload of money to rent out that entire farm, because it was like the only farm with a mountain in the background,
and then they sold they made a profit off the corn when they were done. They just, you know, tilled it up, that, you know, nothing was wasted, I guess. But it's like those kind of things where you may not notice it, but reading it I was like, oh, that's interesting, and then went back and watched some scenes, like, yeah, sure shit, there's fucking mountain. I don't think they ever really say precisely where they are.
Yeah, definitely got a vibe that it was.
Or even what
in
year
the future.
Do they? It's like the not too distant future. It's one of those things.
Yeah, it's like mid. I think it just said mid 21st century.
No. Enough for us to have cryo sleep. Like, but also everything doesn't. Outside of, like, the robots, there's not, like, flying. Everyone's still, like, driving their old beat-up Dodge Chevys, you know, their Dodge Caravans and all that. So, McConaughey and his young daughter, Murph, named after Murphy's Law, and they're a very young Timothée Chalamet.
I forgot about
that.
a not-famous Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah.
I think the next year was Call Me By Your Name, so like that was when he like blew up, was like the next year, or maybe that was 2016, but still, they chase a rogue drone that's going crazy. They lowjack it and land it, and they pretty much like strip it for parts to add to the combines and stuff, and they say it's been flying around. There are no militaries anymore, so it's just flying blind for about 10 years, they said. They head into school. and McConaughey has to do parent-teacher conferences where they sit down and say, your son is very smart, very, very smart, top of his class. However, he's going to be a farmer because we don't need kids to go to college right now.
We can only send one kid to college.
Yeah. So, well, the world needs farmers, and these are dumb farmers. and then we got to talk about Murph. She's bringing these crazy books that says we went to the moon in the 60s, and we don't teach. And I wrote down right here, Brandon probably nodded his head in agreement.
I did think that little part was funny, though. They're like, yeah, well, it was a ploy to bankrupt the Soviets. And I was like, oh, shit, hell yeah, look at that.
Oh, well, there you go. Now you're red-pilled now, too, Michael.
No comment. I'm just kidding.
So he obviously talks back. Like, so that's what I'm saying, like, not too distant future. Because John Lithgow mentions that he was, like, born 40 years too late or 40 years too early.
Right.
Like, I imagine John Lithgow to be kind of, like, our age. Like, he's... You know, that not he's not our age, but he was like born in the late 80s, early 90s. That's what I imagine John Lithgow's character to be.
Yeah. He still remembers
all that stuff, too. He ends up getting her suspended because the school is teaching nonsense. but back on the farm, all the combines have creepily come back to the farmhouse because with all messed up compasses. They mentioned that the farm was built on like a graphite plate, which is probably a terrible place to grow corn.
I would imagine.
But something's going on with gravity there that's messing with everything. Books are falling from bookshelves, to which his daughter Murph is trying to tell him that the ghost is trying to talk to us in Morse code. He kind of writes them off, whatever. Hey, get in the truck. We're going to a Yankees game, but don't get too excited. It's more like an outfield, like a little kiddie game. But I'm assuming they're still professional athletes because they're still the New York Yankees. It's just on a much smaller scale. I'm imagining those Yankee paychecks aren't cutting the way they used to.
I think they said that they're not professional athletes. That it's just like a dog and pony show for the masses. Just
distract him until the next huge dust storm comes rolling in.
Yeah, yep.
Which he does. We have to evacuate the ballpark. They roll home. Unfortunately, dumbass Murph left her window open. Or I guess smartass Murph left her. Yeah, come on, Murph. Come on, Murph. Murph. Come on, Murph.
Murph, 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 Murph.
They go upstairs, and they see the dust is falling in random lines on the ground.
I love that part.
The next morning, we see McConaughey, like, studying it and says it's not Morse code, but it's binary coordinates. So they write down the coordinates. They, you know, I like how he, you know, obviously he's like, you can't come with me because I don't know where this leads. And then, you know, like, she hides in the truck, the classic, under the blankets, and then jumps out and scares the shit out of him. I noticed it more this time because something happens a little later. And I was like, oh, that's actually a really nice touch. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep. I'm glad you picked up on that. That's a
It was literally last night when I saw. I was like, "Oh, I didn't notice that the first two times."
Yeah, it's sad. It breaks my heart.
Very sad. Yeah. She scares the shit out of them. They drive all what seems like all day into the night. They meet this. They're at this chain link fence. They break in the bolt cutters, and they're immediately met by a weird ass robot that's like a brick. Minecraft robot that talks. I like how they do his voice. It doesn't sound like nails. It just sounds like it's a person talking, but there's no like weird robotic verb. Oh, you know what I'm saying? Like it just sounds like a normal talking voice.
Except for Nolan did make it tinny, so it sounded different and he'd like turn the volume down on him so that everybody else around the bots sounded natural, but that was the distinction between them.
He definitely sounded lower.
Yeah.
But, yeah. they find out that they're at NASA. NASA had to go underground because they're the ones having schools teach that we never went. to the moon to get people to not worry about, like, care about space anymore. The wasteful government spending is no more, but we're still actually working underground. Anne Hathaway rolls in, takes Matthew McConaughey to that conference room where Michael Caine is sitting there with a bunch of government officials.
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine, do not go gently into that. Good night. Reminds me of a poem. Burglar have been throwing him away. He tells McConaughey that soon corn will die and life on Earth is actually done. We're dying. We're screwed. And that NASA's mission now is to find life elsewhere. And they've already sent 3 astronauts out on a mission called the Lazarus Project to find habitable planets for Earth. Send them to 3 different planets by going through a wormhole, if you will, to 3 planets they believe to be habitable. If they're good, they're going to literally send us back a thumbs up. Keep sending that thumbs up until we come get you. But we need another mission because we have 3 thumbs up going on right now. And we need a mission to go in there and get their data from them. And Coop, I want you to lead that mission. McConaughey's obviously hesitant because he has kids. Doesn't know how long it'll be. Michael Caine even tells him as much. Who knows how long you'll be gone.
But probably not coming back.
Yeah. The wormhole is next to Saturn, which obviously heads to another galaxy. But they mention, and this is where the science-y stuff I don't understand. They were saying that, like, a wormhole can't, they don't just appear. Somebody has to open them. I mean, we kind of learn later. I still do have an issue with the ending. And obviously we'll get there when we get there. If we want to treat it like 2001 A Space Odyssey, we can. But I'm completely in the dark, confused. I'm in the Tesseract that Brandon is in right now. Michael Caine tells them that we have 2 options. I'm working on this gravity equation. If I figure out this gravity equation, we can use it as an arc, if you will, where we're at right now, to send people from where we are now, from Earth, to these new planets to inhabit. Or plan B, we never figure it out. We load up your spaceship with jizz bombs and you just repopulate those planets yourself. I believe he uses that terminology too.
Gross.
That's what they are.
Frozen embryos.
Yeah, that too. Okay.
Let's go.
Scientific.
Let's go with that.
obviously, Murph is pissed that McConaughey's leaving. He pleads with her to stay. He pleads to her that he needs to leave. You know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few kind of thing. She tells him she figured out the Morse code and it says stay. STAY, stay. He's crying. He finally gets her to relax. How long will you be gone? I don't know. But hey, gravity works weird up there. Time works all weird out there. Who knows, by the time I get back, I might even be your age. Which is a terrible thing to tell her. Obviously, she's upset you're leaving, and he goes, I might be gone so long, you'll be an old woman like me. You know, like I'm saying?
What the hell?
McConaughey's in his 40s, he didn't
really account for the Murph's Law on the other side of that time dilation can work both ways.
Yeah. He does mention, because they do also mention that the black hole, one of the planets, why even go look at that planet? Like, I get it, like, it could be habitable, but it's just like, oh, it's gonna completely fuck all our shit up by going there.
Yeah.
He gets in the car, you know, he leaves, you know, the only thing Timothy Chalamet cares about is if he can use his truck while he's gone. I told my wife, I was like, we're men. We don't have feelings. Just give me a hug and let me borrow your truck, Dad. See you when you get back. Slap him in the ass. He's driving away. Murph comes. And that's when, you know, we get those blankets. We see those same blankets. McConaughey kind of like lifts them up to see if maybe she's down there hiding, you know, one more time. And that's the part. I was just like, damn. I never noticed that the last time, but
he was hoping she was there. But the next camera shot is cool too, where it's the side view of the of the pickup where it's like driving.
Well, we get that side view. I couldn't find any sort of like, is there some kind of theme? Like, I know it's just like the wreck at the beginning is shot from that angle. A lot of the time the spaceship is shot from that angle. The pickup truck was shot there, and at this time it was the back shot.
Yeah, and then when they're leaving, you know, when he's leaving, it's like the same, you know, driver side mirror shot, and it's mm-hmm. it's pretty cool. It's always when he's leaving.
Mm-hmm. And then it cuts right into the rocket launch. We hear the countdown from the, you know, 10 down to 1. Well, we get that, you know, the now famous gif of him driving away, crying, looking disheveled and absolutely destroyed. And then we cut to them launching off. They're up into space. And then we get the very 2001-esque where we need to dock with the giant cylindrical ship, which is based off clock.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 12 little pods on it, the time being a main theme in this movie. We get that really silent... I love just how dead silent those space shots are.
Yeah.
And then...
they're just perfectly inserted at the right times too, you know, and they're not,
it's almost jarring too, because it's complete silence.
I was going to say it's not expected. Like, you're not expecting it to go just deafening quiet. Like,
yeah. I love the robots have humor settings on them.
You can adjust them
down to 75.
Yeah.
The honesty setting is only 90% because absolute honesty doesn't ever fly with humans, so we keep it at 90. He's like, okay, I'll respect that. they set a course for Saturn that will take 2 years' time to get there. And that's, you know, we get the, probably for the 14th time now, the Michael Caine narration, do not go gently into that. Good night. they settle in for their cryonap. And McConaughey and Hathaway. I should say that there are four people on this mission. There are two robots, Tars and Case, and then four humans, Matthew McConaughey, Anne Hathaway, Wes Bentley, and then the scientist name, whose name I don't know, but his character's name is Romley. And he's like their whiz kid. He's the smarty pants. Who... gets very dizzy. He needs the Dramamine the whole trip. McConaughey and Hathaway are discussing about, and he kind of picks up that one of the astronauts Anne Hathaway's in love with. You know, he even asks, I love how she's like getting placed into the cryonap, and he goes over to Tars and he's like whispering to her, and he goes, why are you whispering? They can't hear you. He's just like, tell me, you know, are her and what's his name? Do they have a relationship? He goes, oh, I have a discrepancy. I can't talk about that. And he goes, are you 10% sure or are you 90% sure? And he goes, I can't tell. And he goes, well, you don't have a poker face, I'll tell you that. And he goes, no.
gives him that little tap.
Yeah. We wake up, it's 2 years later. I love just the little shiny dot next to Saturn, like the scope of Saturn being so massive. I had read that they had it at Saturn because originally that's where 2001 A Space Odyssey, that was the planet they were going to go to. But because the computers couldn't make the Saturn's rings very well at the time, they changed it to Jupiter so they didn't have to have that problem. But in the actual novel that Arthur C. Clarke wrote, Saturn is the planet they go to. They come up on that wormhole. I like how Romley's like, can we stop the spinning now since we're here? He gives us the classic event horizon explanation of a wormhole. You know, you want to go from here, A to B. They tell you the shortest distance is a straight line. Actually, we're just going to fold that piece of paper and puncture through, which is directly out of Event Horizon. A great horror space film. You should check out if you haven't already.
The only thing is that they still use that reference today, like explaining wormholes and time travel.
If it ain't
broke,
don't fix it. That's
exactly. So,
no. They enter into the wormhole, and it's super trippy. I'd read that they had to, they used actual, like, quantum physics to, because, you know, wormholes aren't a thing, question mark. They don't, you know, they're all theoretical, which, you know, at back in the day, black holes were theoretical, and now we know they exist.
Back in the day, Pluto was a planet. Now it's not. I mean, anything can happen, you know? Don't get me started.
They used actual quantum physics to, and they put it into a program to try to create what a wormhole may actually look like using actual quantum physics. And I'd read that it took like 800 terabytes worth of data to render
it, yeah,
that wormhole that they fly into.
800 terabytes, Jesus.
Yeah. No, I got a 2 terabyte thing sitting over there, so I need
798 more.
A lot more. Yeah.
Shish.
They fly in, and we get that super trippy, that effect. I'm going to keep saying very 2001 A Space Odyssey, because obviously that's kind of what they're referencing at this point when they're flying into the monolith.
Well, it's deliberate. Everything is deliberate. Sure. It's just a more modern.
Yeah. Honestly, I can say this. When I was sitting there in the theater that first time, really upset that they were ripping off 2001 Space Odyssey, I was like, I swear to God, if this robot, TARS, becomes bad, I'm going to lose my shit. Why did they just change the name of the movie? Yeah. It's called 2003 A Space Odyssey.
But see, you can't look at it as ripping off. A lot of it is just an homage.
Yeah, which I said already at the beginning.
You already said he was sorry, okay?
You were just
stupid,
in a
23-year-old kid.
Drunken stupor.
I wasn't drunk yet, but I was getting there. It's a 3-hour movie, guys.
It is.
Yeah, I was gonna be, okay? Jeez.
I was planning on it.
Yeah. I was only 4 hours away from holding Michael's head over a toilet. He never did that. I'm just kidding.
You never
know. It would have been wild if you threw up an hour into your... Too much pie hole.
Did we even get pizza? I don't know. Anyways.
That's where we started.
But did we even get pizza there?
And then we went upstairs. Yeah, we did.
Oh,
of us did. Ben, Dave, and I did, because we... And then we went to the balcony. We get that great distortion of Anne Hathaway seeing something weird smudging her reality. She, like, sticks her hand through it, and she makes the call. It was the first handshake. Interdimension handshake, I guess. We discuss how all three astronauts were submitting thumbs up. However, one stopped transmitting a few months ago, who is the person that Anne Hathaway is in love with. But the other two, we have a Dr. Manns, who's still submitting a thumbs up, and then we have a Dr. Miller, who she's also submitting a thumbs up, and her planet is first. However, her planet is so close to a black hole that, like we mentioned at the top, 1 hour for them is actually 7 Earth hours. We can visibly see Matthew McConaughey's butthole clench at the thought of any time on this planet, you know, we could be losing, you know, precious moments on Earth. I got kids. I'll get back to Murph. My son don't even know his name, but Murph, I got to give back to. So they decide, all right, we got a plan. We're going to skirt the black hole as much as we can, fly out as far as we can on the Expedition, the name of their spacecraft, and then take the Ranger down to the planet. That way, Romley's still up on the spaceship, and he said he was going to study the black hole as much as he can. Bingo bongo, it might be, you know, a year or two that you're up here waiting by yourself, but we'll go down there, we'll get the data, figure everything out, hopefully it's, you know, everything goes smooth. We're back in a GIF. And a GIF is apparently a year, you know. God willing. We're only losing a year. Sounds good. We got a plan. McConaughey, Hathaway, and Wes Bentley load up in the Ranger with TARS, and they head down on this planet. And it's like an ocean completely full water, but like a shallow ocean, only comes up to their ankles. There's no mountains anywhere. There's nothing but water as far as you can see. They land and they immediately find the beacon that's been beeping. It's no longer activated. They're like, well, shit, she's dead. We need to get out of here. There's more of the debris of her ship over there. Anne Hathaway decides to go all the way. My issue isn't with what Anne Hathaway does. My issue is what Wes Bentley does here.
He lays down and takes a nap.
She goes out to get the data, and we look on the horizon, and there's like, you know, it looks like a mountain. They're standing there for a little bit. They're talking that, you know, we're getting the great music with the ticks every 1.5 seconds, you know, like we said already, letting us know, not even letting us know. You don't really know unless you look it up yourself, but it's a day is going by on Earth every 1.5 seconds. We realize that is on a mountain because it's getting bigger. There's a giant tidal wave heading for us. Cowabunga, dude.
Terrifying.
Tars, I need you to go get Anne Hathaway. He goes full Asterix and then starts flying towards her. Meanwhile, Wes Bentley's just still standing at the door of the ship, not getting in the ship. He's got the video camera. He's filming it. He's like, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. A la American Beauty. Tars picks her up. She's able to get the data. They get back in the ship. They put her in the ship. Wes Bentley, still standing at the door of the ship, not getting in. And then he turns to get in, and then the wave takes him away.
Idiot.
So deserved, stupid.
Deserved it. Yep. You know, just get in the freaking pod, you know.
I wrote down, Wes Bentley dies, because sure.
Idiot.
They ride the wave as the Wipeout music plays. They crest over, they land, they try to leave, but they can't because the ship is now waterlogged. They don't have any spare rice, so they're going to have to wait. And then, again, we're still getting the ticking. He's like, how long is this going to cost us? And Anne Hathaway's like, decades? Like, obviously, clearly, and then what really tripped me out was McConaughey was like, why was the beacon still beeping? And then she's like, well, because we're so close to this black hole.
It just happened.
It just happened for her. She crashed minutes ago on the ship, but because of the time dilation, we were getting the message the whole time. And it wasn't until we were on the planet that the beacon was gone. Which was a real mind-fucky trip.
Yeah.
Thinking about.
The same wave that hit them was probably the one that crashed her ship.
Yeah.
Like, that's how close they were.
They're finally able to kickstart the engines, luckily, because another wave is coming. They get up to the ship. They dock. The door's open. Romley's sitting there. He's got a little more gray in his beard. And he's like, you guys been gone a while. To which Tars is like, 23 hours, 4 months, and 8 days. That's how long...
23 years.
Yeah, sorry, 23 years, 4 yeah. months, and 8 days. Which is a trip back on Earth, but for Romley waiting in the spaceship for 23 years...
Yeah.
...is insane to me. I'm imagining there's no more food on the ship. He was going in and out of cryo, but they said they only have so much cryo. So it's a real trip to just imagine him slowly going insane up there by himself.
Yeah, and then you look at the other guy that they're about to visit, bitching about his nap, and you're like, dude.
But also think about it.
Romilly's been up there for fucking 23 years.
But Dr. Manns is still on that planet for 23 years too.
Yeah.
So the man that we see is a lot younger when he goes. So like it's all the same for everybody.
Yep.
So Anne Hathaway's worried that her dude is dead now. We already know that his beacon has kind of stopped anyway, but was working up until 3 months ago. but now he's 23 years ahead of her. Dr. Manns is 23 years ahead of everybody now, too. So, like, if you start breaking that way down to, we're not even talking about what's going on Earth.
Yep.
We're about to get to a part where we're going to be cross-cutting back and forth between Earth and space. When McConaughey finds out that they've been gone this long, Romley's like, yeah, we got, like, a shit ton of messages y'all need to watch. And another classic gif of just McConaughey just absolutely distraught, slowly dying. He sits down and watches message after message of Timothée Chalamet being like, hey, Dad, second in my class, but I still got C's, so I guess I'm a farmer now. And then we cut to him being Casey Affleck, and his voice is higher now. Your voice gets higher as you age.
Yep.
Hey, Dad, it's me, Casey Affleck.
It's all the dust that he's been breathing in.
I got the black lung, Pops. He's met a girl. He gets married. He had a kid. The baby died. Grandpa died.
It's gone to shit.
Yeah. Still holding on to what of the farm we have left. I keep asking Murph. She doesn't want to send you a message. The next message, we see adult Murph sit down, and it's Jessica Chastain. Says, hey, Dad, this is my very first message. Just thought I should let you know it's my birthday, and it's a special birthday because I'm now the age you were when you left. And that's when you said you could possibly be back, and you're not. Which McConaughey just completely breaks down. Great crier, McConaughey, in this film.
Yeah, no kidding.
Cut to Chastain back on Earth, you know, finishing the message, getting up. Michael Caine's is now in a wheelchair, real excited to see that she's sending her first message. She's like, don't get used to it, I'm just sending the one. We find out that she works for NASA now and is trying to help Michael Caine solve the gravity equation. Back on the ship, Romley lets Hathaway McConaughey know that they no longer have enough fuel to go to both planets, so we need to decide. We don't have enough fuel to go to both planets and then be able to come home, so we need to decide which one is more viable. Well, Manns is still sending out thumbs ups. Hathaway's lover, haven't heard a peep from him, even though the data suggests that planet is better.
Bullshit.
McConaughey tells her that she needs to take her feelings out of it, and then she tells him that maybe love conquers all. Maybe that's what's more important right now, and then they decide, actually, we're going to go check out Man's planet, and then she requests that he be as just as... he remove his feelings, too, if they can never come back home and see his family again, if they need to be dropping jizz bombs on Man's planet. Which she says exactly like that.
She said, well put.
He said, all right, all right, all right.
All right.
Back on Earth, Casey Affleck tells Jessica Chastain that they had to burn another third of their crops. Next year he's going to go work at Willie's farm, and after that, who knows. But we're struggling. We're dying out here.
Things are getting worse.
Speaking of dying, Michael Caine's doing just that. He has Chastain at his bedside as he confesses his deepest, darkest secret.
Which, yeah, this is one thing that I have an issue with.
Preach.
That plan A was never going to work, and he knew that. But he kept it a secret from them.
My issue is that we find out later that when Dr. Mann says, the reason why the equation is bullshit, which, you know, again, Michael Caine says, I solved the equation years ago, plan A will never work.
Right.
We sent them up there to colonize, which pretty much what you just said. She gets pissed, sends the message being like, Anne Hathaway, did you know? Did my dad know? That kind of thing. My whole thing is that Dr. Manns even says, well, we don't, if the only reason why we don't know is because we don't know what's inside a black hole. If we know what's inside a black hole, we can figure all this stuff out. So I don't know why they just weren't up front with that. Especially since they already... They said that they were sending probes in, but you can only have so much information as for so long, but...
Yeah, and that's what I have an issue with, is why did he just... Why didn't they know that, and why didn't he be up front with them about the real mission? Like,
I think
going up there to colonize...
McConaughey never would have gone.
Right.
If he knew, like... But the fact that nobody else knew, like Anne Hathaway never knew that... She was trying to go up there to meet her boo anyway, so it's like her colonizing with him sounds like a great idea to her. But so like it's weird to keep her in the dark about it.
Plus, can we question her choice in men in this movie?
Yeah,
if you want.
Yeah, so, I mean that's.
There we go. We're questioning.
What did she see in that guy?
I don't know. He's a pilot, dude.
Heart wants what the heart wants, man.
The problem is that the photo we see of him, he's not wearing aviators, so... Yeah. Michael Caine tries to hit us with another poem before he dies. Do not go gently. And then he goes gently. Chastain sends the message saying, your father died today, he went peacefully, everything's cool. Also, fuck you, did you know? This was all a sham, did my father know? She's sending that message as we're landing on Dr. Mann's planet, which is covered in ice. Better than water. It's just colder water.
Is it, though? Because they're trapped in it. So there's not only, a bottom layer, but there's a top layer. So they can't fly out of it.
I'd read that this was the only thing that was fantastical. Was the ice planet, because the...
The helium ice, the frozen helium ice or whatever.
It would have been, like, harder. It wouldn't have just been, like,
But. Well, and if it was frozen, wouldn't it have, like, weighed more?
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't it have fallen, but...
Yeah. I don't
still
know,
cool.
Yeah. We watched Avatar last week, you know. That doesn't make sense to me either, but... they find Dr. Manz's campsite. They open up the cryos. They, like, tear open his cryo blanket. Just like...
Get out!
Can't you just... And guys, guess who it is?
Mm.
Matt Damon.
The Martian.
Yeah, which is what, a year later or a year before?
A year later, yeah.
Is it a year later?
Yep.
Big audible gasp in the theater. Variety had reported that he had signed on, but he wasn't in any trailers, wasn't at any premieres, so it was kind of like a big shocker that he was there. Matt Damon immediately starts crying. By the way, I love Matt Damon's character in this movie.
Yeah, me too.
Like, that arc that he has is so, like, it's very small, but it is a lot of fun.
It's small, but it's heavy too. Like, he thinks like he is going to single-handedly save the human race.
He
like,
thinks he's God's gift to
mankind. Like, and I love how like how esoteric he is about it. Like, he's just like off on his little tangent speeches and
his monologues. Four monologues.
They're so good.
Damon starts crying because, my God, I never thought I was going to see anybody. He mentioned that last time he went into cryosleep, we didn't even do a end date, just kind of hoping that somebody would wake him up, which is what happened. The days are cold here, but we can live here. If we go down to the second layer, we're up top. Why my camp is up top? Who I don't know. But if we go down to the bottom, you can breathe the air. And we're toast my goats. We're good to go. The days are cold, 67 hours long. Nights are even colder, another 67 hours long. But we're good. My TARS unit over there, Kip, K-I-P-P, more like K-R-I-P, because he's dead. I tore him apart. I decommissioned him. He malfunctioned. Oh, you mind if we have TARS check him out? No, he needs a human touch. Don't worry about it. Oh, yeah. Don't worry. Stay away from that. Stay away. We finally get the message come in. TARS is like, hey, you got a message from Murph. That's when they get their side of that. what is he talking about? We're just a colony. And that's when Matt Damon's like, yeah, I actually knew about this. Here's the thing. When I was talking with Michael Caine, he was just like, Earth's pretty much screwed. We're going to need to just colonize. Then he said something about, you know, don't go gently into that good night. And they're like, fuck the poem. He did the poem. but the reason why the gravity equation doesn't work is because we don't know what's inside a black hole. It takes in all light, messes with gravity. If we can figure out what's inside there, we're good to go. You know, but the problem is we'll never know because nothing gets out of a black hole. McConaughey and Hathaway are obviously pissed, and they decide, hey, we're just going home. I'm just going to go die with my kids. How about that? Cut to back home. Chastain gets this weird feeling that maybe the ghost in her room was trying, which is, this is where I start having issues. It's just like out of nowhere. She's like, that ghost I haven't thought about in 23 years. I think this has something to do with what's going on. Jessica Chastain gets to a lot of conclusions very quickly in this film. And she's right about every single one.
She's smart.
Wicked smart. But it's just, yeah. We don't have any time with her. So it just seems that she's just like, oh, I think this means something. It does. It means exactly that. The ticking on the watch, that's the gravity equation. I know it.
Oh, weird guess. You nailed it right on the head.
Yeah. Topher Grace, come with me. Get in the car.
Yeah.
Romley tells McConaughey that they should send TARS into the black hole and have him relay as much data as possible until the event horizon. So we're going to leave. Matt Damon will probably send more people to get you out of here, but right now, you know, we got to get going. He's like, cool, just help me secure these modules real quick. You'll be on your way. It's all good. You're going to have a transponder. Are you jacked? You're primed? You're good to go? I love all that. Him and Damon start working their way down to these modules, and we get Matt Damon monologuing about the yearning to be with other people, intercut with Chastain exploring the bookshelf. Casey Affleck's little kid comes in there, and he's like, Mommy lets me play in here, but I don't touch your stuff. Which I'd be like, good. Fucking touch my shit.
Touch
just
Legos.
The way you left it. Yeah. Did you touch my drum set?
Yeah.
Sitting in the corner.
This is a drum set? I didn't see that before.
Damon, you know, is confessing about how he never thought, like, he thought that his planet would definitely be the one they would go to. He's the Boy Scout. It's a real bummer that actually this planet isn't inhabitable. McConaughey's like, what? And then he gets knocked down that little ledge. And he goes, sorry, I can't let you go home. I need your ship to go to the other planet. I've been sent by God. I'm on a mission, and you're ruining everything, kind of thing.
He's like, this place is fucked, so I got to get out of here. You guys can stay.
I like how they're wrestling on the ground. And then he starts headbutting him. And he goes, you know, if you do that, there's a 50% chance you'll break your own helmet. And he goes, that's the best odds I've had in a long time. Gah, gah, gah. Starts headbutting the mask. Cracks it. Now he's suffocating. McConaughey is. And then he just like is walking away, monologuing more about how, hey, they say when you die, you see your family. Do you see your family? Like super like. Like
what's
Bond
the last thing you see
monologue?
When you die?
Yeah. They're with you now, I know it. I thought I could watch this, but I can't. Sorry, but I got to go. McConaughey's crawling, this transponder, he finds it.
Which he says that, he says he thought he could watch this, which means he'd been thinking about doing this. Like this was all completely planned. It wasn't like spontaneous, hey, people showed up. He's like, once people get here, I'm going to.
Because they're going to know that. They're going to know that it's not a good thumbs up. That their whole mission was, they mentioned at the beginning, if it's not habitable, hey, thanks for your bravery. We'll hang a picture of you on the 10-year wall that said, here lies Matt Damon, died on Ice Hoth.
But we won't show his face because we can't let you know who it is playing him.
He warns Anne Hathaway right as Romley is messing with Kip. This data doesn't make sense. Kip blows up. It's been MacGyvered to explode if it's been messed with.
Needs a human touch.
Yeah. and he touched it, and he blew him up. Hathaway swoops in on the Ranger and saves McConaughey, but unfortunately, Damon has GTA'd their spacecraft. Back home, this is when we start going cross-cut, cross-cut, cross-cut. Topher Grace is with Jessica Chastain, trying to figure out why their son has a terrible cough. Like, we don't already know why he has a terrible cough. While she's exploring the bookshelf, she finds that watch, sees it's like the seconds' hands are, like, ticking all weird. I love back up in space. Matt Damon's flying up to the ship, and they're warning him. Like, he docks, but he doesn't dock properly because he's flying manual. They're trying to radio him, don't do it. Whatever you do, don't open the hatch. You're going to decompress the entire thing. You're going to blow it up, and we're all fucked. And I love how Matt Damon is getting ready to monologue again as he's got his hand on the door, and he goes, you know, there comes a moment.
Yeah.
And then it just goes quiet.
Yeah,
like, I love it. They don't even give him the validation of a speech.
Oh, but it was fun while it lasted.
It was so cool.
I just love I'm sure whatever you were gonna say is gonna be super eloquent and amazing. And
yeah, and the cool thing about those cutting back to Earth and the other planet is that it's you know, parallel. I mean, they can't stay on this planet, and then you have Topher Grace saying, "We can't have them stay here. Like,
it's
we're
bad.
All fucked.
It's bad. We gotta go. It's bad."
Yeah.
McConaughey puts on his aviators, turns his hat backwards, and docks that sucker while it's in full spin. I gotta feel it.
It's the equivalent of just like
motherfucker sideways.
Just like,
yeah, just crank. Yeah. Cranks the wheel. They're hitting the G's.
And Hathaway passes out.
They land, but because the explosion happened when Damon blew up, it knocked the ship off its course, and it's now getting closer and closer to the black hole, which is obviously even more fucking with our time. They plan to have McConaughey manually drive towards the black hole and slingshot Hathaway towards her lover on that planet. And then they're, while doing that, sending Tars through the black hole, and then McConaughey will then go through the wormhole back home. That's the plan. And doing that, they even mentioned, this maneuver is going to cost us 51 years. They do that, but then McConaughey decides to self-sacrifice himself. He's going to go gently into that good night. And he launches himself into the black hole. While Anne Hathaway is just like, all right, no, don't go. I'm still going this way, though.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And this is where I'm completely lost.
All right.
And ask in the room, do we want to just get through it first and then go back and talk about it? Or do you want to talk as we go through it?
Let's
go as we go through it.
Yeah.
Okay. We can figure it out.
We're in eternal darkness. His comms are starting to drop. He's still trying to talk to Tars, who's already gone through the black hole. Tars, you hear me? Tars, Tars, Tars. Can you hear me? I see nothing. I got black. I see black. There's nothing. Then he gets hit with like this gravelly space debris, fluttering and floating in him, kind of like dust. Hits him, tears the ship apart. Now he is by himself. What seems like floating turns into a free fall where we see all these different quadrants below him, and he lands in what they reference as the Tesseract, which is, you know, where Brandon is in right now.
It's a four-dimensional figure.
Five-dimensional.
Is it five?
He is in a five-dimensional space.
Oh, but
a Tesseract, it was modeled after a Tesseract, which is a four-dimensional cube.
Yeah. Tesseract and, is bound by 8 three-dimensional hyperplanes, whatever that means.
And it looks like it's in his home. It's his little girl's room, Murph's room. And he's seeing both past and present. That's where we get the classic where he's floating through. He's trying to yell at Murph because he can see Murph. Murph! Murph! Come on, Murph! Murph! Marv, he's hitting books. Books are falling out of the shelf, and we see her look. And that's where we go, this motherfucker was in that bookshelf the whole goddamn time?
Yes.
he's yelling, "No, no, stay!" You know, he's seeing himself, you know, talking to Murph as he leaves that last time. "Stay, stay." "Oh, no, what I need to do is I need to go." "Oh." And he starts hitting the books out to create Morse code for stay. Then Tars radios in. Tells him that someone in the future, we don't know who, but someone in the future figured all of this out and made this 5D space to clear things up for him. For him to help warn, because the future knows that Murph Cooper is the actual savior of all humanity.
Because it's already happened.
Sure, but see, this is my problem. We're in a paradox. The books don't fall unless he goes on the mission, but if the books don't fall, he doesn't know the...
They were already going to fall.
Creates the coordinates in the dust to tell him, "Tars, give me the coordinates to NASA. I have to give myself the coordinates." If he doesn't do that, he doesn't go. But so now we're just stuck in a circle here. It's a paradox. And this is where maybe I'm just not the fucking smartest person in the world to talk about this. And that, you know what? And I'm man enough to say it. but it's still a paradox. And one can't happen without the other.
Correct.
It's like that damn chicken and its egg, you know?
Yes, but it's already happened, and so it was going to happen anyways.
I can't wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, I did the same mental gymnastics you just did, Michael.
It's like...
But it can't happen unless he does it.
But it was already going to happen.
Only because he has to warn himself now.
Yes, yes. But it was going to happen. You don't think so?
Are you saying that if he didn't warn himself, they would have found somebody else to do it for them?
No, he was eventually going to go to the Tesseract and help himself, which helps Murph to help humanity. Murph's law.
All right. Well, I'm not gonna figure it out.
Oh, yeah, because what's Murphy's law? What will happen?
Anything that can go wrong. But then he also says it's like, well, actually, it's anything that could happen can happen. It's not just the negative. It's also the positive.
And so basically the Tesseract is where all the timelines connect, and he is going to send them on the right timeline that saves humanity. And the theory is that humans have evolved, and it's the human race that has created the Tesseract.
I think my biggest issue is, and I'm going to put this in dumb terms for myself. You know, in the movie Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey or Excellent Adventure? You know that one? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
That's okay.
I know of it. I've never seen it.
At the end of the movie, they go, "Oh, no, we don't have the keys to get in here." And he goes, "Well, we have a time machine. Let's just remember to go back and put the keys in our pockets." And then they open their... "Oh, here's the keys. They're in our pockets now." Like, that is how it feels like they're tying this movie up. Someone in the future did it. They figured it out. Don't dwell on it.
I mean, I guess you could look at it that way. Your opinion. Or, you know, your...
Oh, that was a Brandon not agreeing with me. And that's okay. That was a... Oh.
I can see it, but I don't agree with it.
Okay.
That's fine.
He tickles the wall to manipulate the watch. So the watch is doing Morse code to solve the gravity equation. She has this wild hair. "Let me look at this watch." Sees it ticking and goes, "Oh, well, this is clearly the how I solve the gravity equation.
This is clearly exactly what we need, and I guessed it on the first try."
And then she goes, "Oh, I know who's back there. My dad's back there." Which is another thing. That's a whole other element to this where I'm just like, really? That's what makes the most sense? Is that he's probably stuck behind your bookshelf doing all this for you? I don't know. We don't need to get in the weeds about that, because that's what happens and that's what she does. Eureka, I solved it. Now that the gravity equation has been done, Coop's mission is now complete, and Tars tells him, the people in the future are now closing the Tesseract because you have completed their mission. We see it folding in on it. It's a really cool shot of it, like, folding in on itself with, like, a bright light. And then we cut to him just floating in space just outside of Saturn. And then he wakes up. And then now we're just going to end this movie in 5 minutes, too, which is also really weird. For a movie that's just shy of 3 hours, I could have used, like, another 20. Because it just feels like... he wakes up on a space station. They say, hey, you're on Cooper Station. He goes, ah, it's nice of you to name it after me. And they're like, oh, we actually named it after your daughter, the actual savior of humanity. Is she here? She's a few weeks away. She's been in cryosleep for 2 years. She's been holding on for us to find you. We get that great shot of outside, and you can see, like, it's...
the curvature.
That curvature of the gravity. He lives in his own farmhouse. Your daughter said you love farming, so we made this exactly the way it looked when you left. It's also like a museum, but he gets to live in it. I love the shot of him, like, drinking beers on the porch with Tars next to him. We finally get to see Murph, played by now Ellen Burstyn. She's in her 90s, maybe even 100s, who knows. She's on her deathbed. Her entire family's there. Meet your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddad. I will say I really hate how she's just like, you shouldn't see me die. I've waited this entire time to see you. Now go. Leave. She says, I have my family here. I was like, bro, I'm your family too.
Yeah, what was this whole, what? You waited for him? What?
So, like, she sees him, and I like how you told them I liked farming. And then she's like, you don't belong here. Not in a mean way, just a very affectionate way. You don't belong here. You need to steal a ship and go find Anne Hathaway. And then we cut to Anne Hathaway, who's burying her lover on a planet that she's clearly breathing air. She doesn't have her helmet on. Looks like the deserts of Arizona out there. So we got water, we got ice, now we got heat. He goes, all right, Murph. And he dips out, steals a ship, flies off to meet Anne Hathaway, and ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. The end.
Brilliant. Wow.
At the end of this movie, it brought out a lot of existential feelings of, like, oh, shit.
About going gently into that good night?
That.
Or not going gently into that good night.
Maybe both, but then just, like, you know, like I said, space stuff, time, just, like, it was a trip.
And then you start thinking about what timeline you're on.
Yeah.
The forbidden timeline.
Maybe.
Forbidden.
A real fun thing I found, by the way, since, you know, we talked about the score and how great the score is. Nolan showed Hans Zimmer zero footage. Normally when you write a score, you're watching the film and you're scoring it to the movie. You have the band in there playing while the movie's going that way. You're recording at the same time. He showed him zero footage and told him absolutely no plot points to this movie. Instead, he wrote him a short story about a father leaving a child to complete an important job. And it only had two sentences of dialogue in it. And it's one was, I'll come back. And the other one was, when. And that was all he had to go on.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and I think the ticking of the clock score, like, he only gave him, like, a small amount of details, and it was basically just the fact, like, the time dilation part, and that's what he came up with, was that ticking.
Well, and I saw that some of the music on the score is made with 60 beats per minute to, like, for the seconds.
For the time,
so it's timed, so... In the parts of the movie where time is at its most crucial, that's the music that is at 60 beats a minute.
Apparently, Nolan also handpicked all the books on the bookcase too.
Hmm.
Like, besides like the generic
real
like
encyclopedia for dummies.
No, like the generic encyclopedia books. It's like A Wrinkle in Time is in there. Some other like a T.S. Eliot
Guide to the Galaxy. Infinite Jest.
Think more
Yeah, I see yeah. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah. But that, I think that's pretty cool, too. They all deal with the themes of this movie.
Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. Well, Michael, I'm glad you chose this movie.
Yay.
Because I still wouldn't have watched it had it not been required. But I'm glad I went back in and watched it. Like I said, any sort of film that you think is bad and who knows how long, and sometime you just need to mature with it. Or vice versa. There's some yeah. movie I've watched. Case in point, 2008, December 2008. The Jim Carrey film Yes Man came out. And I thought that was one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. Watched it 3 weeks ago. I was like, this is fucking stupid.
I watched that the other day, actually. That's funny. I was just hanging out downstairs, and I was like, let's see what's... And I watched it, and I was like,
yeah.
That's funny, because I was watching Bruce Almighty the other night.
Oh, that's a good one.
Still
is
funny.
It, is it Bruce or... no, it's one where he's like controlling Steve Carell. Or else he's like,
yeah, Steve Carell. <it's like, laughs>
Me and my brothers went to Bend last summer, and that was one of the ones that was on their TV, and we were watching it just cracking up.
Yeah, it's still funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Since we're kind of putting an end, well, maybe not necessarily forever, but we just did those two Nolan films. Where does this fall in your Nolan rankings? I'm not saying you have to have a strictly 1 through 10, but if you watch it 8 times a year, Brandon, it probably has to be up there. But
yeah, I would say it's probably either my favorite. Yeah, it's probably my favorite, number 1.
Did you
it's like the one, it's the one that it yeah, I did. I wasn't completely blown away with it, but...
I think it's weird that that's what he went for, was just doing away. A biopic. But
yeah, I thought there was some aspects of it that were great, but it was a good movie. But this is definitely my favorite Nolan movie. I like The Prestige, too.
Mm-hmm. They call it The Prestige.
I watched that a couple months ago. Emma was like, we have to watch. And I watched it, and I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was after we were talking about it when we did the Jackbox games.
Yeah.
Had you not seen it before that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you have to bring it back.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
This card. But yeah, it is good. He doesn't make a lot of bad ones.
Dunkirk.
Insomnia is probably the one I've never seen The Following. It's his first film. It's the only one he's made. Insomnia, The Dark Knight Rises, and Dunkirk are probably at the bottom for me.
Yeah, Dark Knight Rises is probably...
I think that might be his worst movie.
Still haven't seen Inception, though, so...
Oh. Wow. That's what starts that trend.
Yeah.
That's weird you hadn't seen Inception.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It was another one of those movies like Avatar that was just like blown up and everybody was talking about it and I never got around to it and everybody still kept talking about it and then I just was like, well, I'll get to it when I get to it, I guess.
Like Biggie Small said, man, it was all a dream.
Used to read Word Up magazine.
Or was it? No. Anything else we wanted to talk about with Interstellar?
It's a good pick.
'Twas good.
That puts a nice little bow on Michael's picks. Nice. We now transition to the final film for Brandon. 'Twas also the first film you chose. 'Twas. We're only going, depending on who you ask, this movie either came out December 2014 or it came out March 2015. You decide. We'll let you decide. Mm-hmm. Kind of keeping in the same sci-fi genre.
Yeah, I like the timing of this pick, too.
Yeah, you know, but we're staying at home, and we're staying more in one home, if you will.
One timeline.
We're doing Ex Machina. Been excited about doing this for a while. I wanted to watch it a bunch this past year after you chose it, and I was like, no, have restraint.
Same, I haven't watched it. There's been a couple times where I've been tempted, but I've waited.
And I believe, Michael, you said you hadn't seen this movie.
I have not. I'm looking at where to watch it right now.
Ex Machina.
I think you're going to really like this one, Michael.
I think you're going to like the way you look.
That too.
I won't guarantee it, but I do think you'll like this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, we'll be back next time with Ex Machina. What do you say we go ahead and cut print, check the gate?
See you guys.
See ya.